For centuries, what went on behind the walls of China's imperial palace in Beijing was private. Few outsiders were permitted to enter. China's last dynasty fell in 1911, and most of the objects of everyday life were packed away. Ceremonial robes, meticulous silk paintings, delicate porcelain, and thousands of other objects are on display in an exhibit called The Secret World of the Forbidden City at the Phoenix Art Museum. For member station KJZZ, Mark Moran reports.
Imagine a palace full of brightly painted wood, stone floors dotted with lush, brilliant yellow carpets, meticulously painted silks decorating the walls, and incense wafting through the air. Emperors dressed in robes hand-stitched from padded silk. They washed in lacquer bathtubs and drank from golden teacups. The Forbidden City was completed in 1420 and was home to Emperors Kangxi, Yongsheng, Qinlong, and others. They were all entertained with music played on the most advanced instruments of the time. There were 1,000 buildings, 10,000 rooms, and tens of thousands of people lived behind 10-foot-high vermilion red walls that separated the city, which was the seat of imperial power, from the rest of China. Eunuchs, concubines, servants, and guards were there solely to serve the emperor, the son of heaven.
This person was the link between the human and the cosmic world.
Dr. Tim Wong is director of the Center for Asian Studies at Arizona State University.
There's a whole ceremony of groveling in front of the emperor. It's prescribed, and there's so many kowtows knocking your head in the ground. It leaves no doubt about who is superior and who's inferior when you see him. Everything on earth has to cater to him, the best of everything.
The emperor's throne room in the exhibit is framed with 12-foot-high bronze and jade chimes, like the ones heard in this recording. Janet Baker is curator of Asian art for the Phoenix Art Museum.
I had often heard about the bronze bells and chimes before, but had never had an opportunity to see them. And I, like many other people, were overwhelmed by the size and scale of them. We thought of them as maybe something you could put on your desk, but that's not the case. They're room size.
It's just awesome to think that back in the 1600s and back further, this beautiful work was going on.
Visitor Charlotte Hatch is most impressed with the elaborate imperial robes.
And some of the embroidery work they did was the finest. So terribly fine and so beautiful.
One of the most spectacular robes on display is from the Qing Dynasty, the last to occupy the Forbidden City. It's a full-length imperial yellow dragon robe. Yellow was worn as far back as the dynasty's first emperor, Shunzi. He was believed to be the reincarnation of a dragon, the symbol of male power and authority. Curator Janet Baker.
The entire surface of the robe, from head to toe, both sides and along the sleeves, are lavishly embroidered in rich, ornate designs in countless tiny stitches, all in fine silk thread, as well as some use of metallic thread for the golden dragons themselves. We know very little about how many people worked for how many hours to create these splendid robes, some of which might only have been worn for very few occasions, maybe only once.
Charlotte Hatch was curious about that too, and about how anyone could have been that detailed.
Did they have glasses back then? I wonder.
The answer is yes. In fact, Pu Yi, China's last emperor, owned one of the first pair of eyeglasses in China. But it's not known whether the people making his clothes ever got to use them.
We do know that the most preferred candidates for doing embroidery were young women whose fingers were tiny and nimble and whose eyesight was keen. Of course, once their nimbleness and their clear-eyedness declined, they were simply cast aside and their position was filled by someone else, young and nimble-fingered, to continue on.
Those nimble fingers made more than 40,000 robes worn by the emperor for everything from dining to horseback riding. The emperor set the cultural and recreational standards of the day. And he was magistrate, judge, scholar, family patriarch, and supreme military commander. That, says scholar Tim Wong, made him a very lonely man.
It was very difficult to, for example, have a good friend, have even a lover. It's very, very hard for them to have the kind of simple human companionship that you and I can have.
The emperor often sought guidance from the spiritual world. The Qing dynasty in particular felt increasing pressure from Chinese dissidents unhappy with imperial rule. The exhibit has a solid gold Buddha and a sacred bowl made from a human skull trimmed in silver.
When you look at it, you can almost envision that person's cranium. And of course, what more appropriate part of the human skeletal remains to use to create a sacred work of art than the skull, which encased the mind, the seat of wisdom and enlightenment.
But even with all his isolation, the emperor was intrigued with Western culture, and the influences of the West crept behind the walls of the Forbidden City. Emperor Puyi, the last of the Qing dynasty, was taken with a bicycle. In the early 1900s, he ordered 20 of them from Europe.
He was not a very good rider, however, and I think he crashed quite a few of the bikes, since according to the Palace Museum curators, this is the only one left in one piece.
When China became a republic in 1912, Puyi was ousted. Since then, the imperial palace has not been well cared for. The walls are beginning to crumble, grass is growing between cracks in the sidewalks, and the buildings themselves have little climate control. Delicate items are not protected. Tim Wong says that's precisely why it's important to see the objects up close while they're on display in Phoenix, to get a glimpse into a China that no longer exists.
I think it behooves all of us to not only look at it, enjoy it, but learn from it. These artifacts show a lot more about what China really was and how they're different from us.
The secret world of the Forbidden City will be on display here until early April. After that, the works in it will be shipped back to Beijing. The Imperial Palace is China's number one tourist attraction. Most of the delicate things on display here will be packed away in storage until and if facilities in China can display them. For NPR News, I'm Mark Moran in Phoenix.